tonight we are on concept 3, page C9, which is on the back half of the 2021 through 2023 Red Service Manual, which reads, as a traditional means of creating and maintaining a clearly defined working relation between the groups, the conference, the AA General Service Board, and its several service corporations, staffs, committees, and executives, and of thus ensuring their effective leadership. It is here suggested that we endow each of these elements of world service with a traditional right of decision. Billy, you'll have until 2 minutes to the top of the hour, and the time is now yours.
Thanks, Brooke. Hey everyone, Billy Alcoholic. Welcome, everyone. Brooke already read the concept. I just do want to start by saying that the concept in the beginning says it should be a clearly defined working relation between the groups, the conference, and the General Service Board. And then a couple of other things. In other words, everyone should stay in their lane, which is a hard task for alcoholics to stay in their lane. We love to be in someone else's lane. That's what we love to do. And this concept requires trust, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you're looking to trust the process in the service manual, it's in the section on committee conferences and how the conference operates. That's where you'll find trust the process means trust the committee process. But this is about getting things done, and this is about giving AA leaders the power and responsibility to actually get their jobs done, which there's nothing worse than having a job to do and not having the authority to get it done. In the first paragraph, it goes on to say it should be the traditional right of all World Service Boards, committees, and executives to decide which problems they will dispose of themselves and upon to which matters they will report, consult, or ask for specific direction. I love that line, but it's talking about World Service Boards, committees, and executives. That's who it's talking about. Everybody below the triangle, below the conference, General Service Board, AWS, AA Grapevine, and then the general manager, GSO, and the publisher of the Grapevine. It says we ought to trust our world servants with these discretions because otherwise no effective leadership can be possible. And then it says in the next paragraph, we have seen how the AA groups under the concept of group conscience are today holding ultimate authority and final responsibility for world service. So I just want to mention that again. Here is now another concept that uses the words ultimate and final to describe the General Service Conference and the groups, not the board. We have also noted how, by reason of the conference charter and the trusted servant provision of Tradition 2, the groups have delegated to their General Service Conference full authority to manage and conduct AA's world service affairs. So I want to stop there talking about groups for a second, because let's talk about a right of decision that's never talked about a lot, and that is electing your delegate. Like, whether you like your GSR, don't like your GSR, think they make reports too long, whatever else, the bottom line is you are giving that person the authority to elect your delegate. Whatever else they do, hopefully they do a decent job, but you are turning over your ability to elect a delegate to that GSR in your home group. So when you raise your hand in your home group to elect the GSR, the complaining stops then. You don't like how your delegate voted at the conference, then maybe you should elect a different GSR. Maybe you should make sure that your GSRs are informed about certain things. You just can't blame someone else. It is the GSRs and the DCMs who are electing the delegate. Towards the bottom, it says, nevertheless, it has been long evident that these highly important charter provisions cannot themselves ensure smooth functioning and proper leadership at the several different levels of service which are involved. This has become crystal clear, and we need to not seek very far for the reasons. For example, knowing that theirs is the final authority, again, another reference to theirs being the final authority of the groups. The groups are sometimes tempted to instruct their delegates exactly how to vote upon certain matters in the conference. Because they hold the ultimate authority, there is no doubt that the AA groups have a right to do this. If they insist, they can give directives to their delegates on any and all matters. So let's get rid of that urban myth. The urban myth that the delegate can hear new information, change their vote. And I'm not saying that 99.9% of the time the delegate shouldn't have full rein. But you can't say that an area can't instruct its delegate how to vote. Not unless you want to change Concept 3's narrative, what Bill W. wrote a long time ago. It goes on to say, but good management seldom feels the full exercise of stated set of ultimate rights. For example, were the groups to carry their instruction of delegates to extremes, then we would be proceeding on the false theory that the group opinion in most World Service matters would somehow be much superior to the conference opinion. And on the bottom, it says, of course, it is understood that the complete reporting of conference actions is always desirable. Complete reporting. That would include what the vote was at conference. That would include how your delegate voted. If you're someone here who wants to be a delegate someday, there's nothing wrong with admitting that. But if you want to be delegate but don't want to tell your area how you voted, maybe you should look for another path in AA service. In fact, it's a great learning lesson for groups or areas. If a delegate votes differently than their area really wanted, but has a really good reason for it, that's a really good learning lesson. I want to say, as we go on here, trust the process is really better off said, trust but verify. There's nothing wrong with asking questions, nothing. I also want to say, and this is my experience based on 4 years as an appointed committee member on the Trustees Correction Committee and 4 years as a non-trustee director on AA World Services and 4 years as a General Service Board trustee and 2 years as the chair of AA World Services, I can fully honestly tell you that less than 5% of everything the boards do is confidential. Less than 5%. And in that 5%, whether it be a human resources issue, whether it be some kind of legal issue, I throw trademark and copyright into the legal category. But I can tell you that AAWS, when it has its board meeting, it goes from 8 in the morning until 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Maybe the last hour is executive session. Maybe there's an issue or two to talk about. Same with the General Service Board. And I respect and know that those issues need to be confidential and need to be held at the board level. But 95% of what the boards do should be open and transparent to everybody. There is this thing going around AA that unanimity is unity. And I just want to let you know that that is absolutely not true. In fact, I'll get to it more next week when we are in Concept 4, but I'm going to cheat a little and just read something in Concept 4 that Bill wrote about the boards. He says it is also noteworthy that in actual practice, our trustees and headquarters people have never yet voted in a block. There, meaning the trustees or the boards of AAWS, AA Grapevine, their differences of opinion among themselves are nearly always as sharp and considerable as those to be found among the delegates themselves. Our power, our secret power, has always been respect for different opinions. That's our secret power. Being afraid that we can't tell the board or we can't tell the fellowship that maybe a decision was 18-3 or 15-6. Over the last couple of years, I've noticed this trend of the board always wanting everything to be unanimous. That's not what Bill writes about. The strength in our fellowship is the difference of opinion at every level. Now, those differences of opinion should not be ugly or malicious or anything like that. We should be able to be friends with and serve with people that we disagree with on an issue or two. It goes on page 10 to say, the right AA solution for this problem is to be found, however, in the latter part of Tradition 2, which provides for trusted servants. This really means that we ought to trust our responsible leaders to decide within the framework of their duties how they will interpret and apply their own authority and responsibility to each particular problem or situation as it arises. This sort of leadership discretion should be the essence of right of decision, and I'm certain that we need not have the slightest fear of granting this indispensable privilege at nearly every level of service. There will always be plenty of ultimate authority to correct inefficiency, ineffectiveness, or abuse. So the ultimate authority, that means the conference's job is to correct inefficiency, ineffectiveness, or abuse. If the conference does not function well, the groups can send in better delegates. It says it right there. If the trustees get badly out of line, the trustees can censure them or even reorganize them. So this talk that reorganizing is punitive is crazy. If the headquarters services go sour, the trustees can elect better directors and hire better help. These remedies are ample and direct. But for so long as our world services function reasonably well, and there should always be charity for occasional mistakes, then trust must be our watchword. Otherwise, we shall wind up leaderless. And I love that line, charity for occasional mistakes. The difficulty with that in AA service is in order for there to be charity, there has to be an admission of a mistake. And sometimes in AA service, we never want to admit we did something wrong. We just want to bang our heads against the wall that we did the right thing, we did the right thing, and it just blew up in our face. I can tell you honestly, some of you have probably seen the anniversary edition of the first edition Big Book. It was to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the printing of the Big Book. We could debate another time whether that book was really to celebrate it or to dig us out of a financial hole after the recession of 2008 to 2011. But neither way, we decided to print the 75th anniversary Big Book. Some of you may know that there was a big mistake made with that book. Huge mistake. I was the chair of AAWS at the time. I remember when the office came to me in December of that year and said, Billy, we have $1 million mistake. It was like $950,000 mistake. And so I immediately had an emergency meeting of the AWS board that night. We were in at night early for the board meeting, and we met that night. We immediately established a committee to look into what happened, not burning witches, none. No, just looking into what happened so that it wouldn't happen again. At the conference, 5 months later, there were some delegates who were not happy about a $950,000 write-down, and neither should they be. Now, the reason it happened is actually pretty basic. The AA Publishing Department uses a very sophisticated program, an inventory program, that has algorithms built in it that tells you when to order the next order of books. That's how all publishing companies work. The problem was that this book got entered as a recurring book instead of a one-time special book. That's what happened. So, because it got entered as a recurring book, when the inventory went to a certain level, the system generated a message to order more books, which they did. Problem is, we still had books ready to sell, and this wasn't a recurring book. Some of you may know that even at this year's General Service Conference, there were those printed books out on the table for delegates to take one if they wanted. Like, we had a lot of leftover books. And our auditors told us we probably weren't going to sell them, which means you got to take the write down, which affects your financial performance. But at that conference, I mean, I stood at the podium and said, yeah, A World Services made a mistake. Not the employees, not the office, just this falls to us. And I assure you, we've done the work to make sure this doesn't happen again. And that's the kind of charity that we should be looking for. But when you get to a podium and you're unwilling to admit that a mistake was made, that's when the fellowship gets really mad and really angry. And then you start looking for excuses and making excuses. That time in AA taught me a real lot of lessons for sure. I want to talk about there are four examples, A, B, C, and D, at the end of the third concept. It says, accepting in charter provisions to the contrary, the conference should always be able to decide which matters it would fully dispose of in its own responsibility and which questions it will refer to the AA groups. In other words, the conference is allowed to say, let's take this question to the AA groups. That's the conference's decision. The conference is not allowed to change the traditions, the steps, or the concepts. That's been taken away from the conference. Then it says, therefore, it ought to be clearly understood and agreed that our conference delegates are primarily the world servants of AA as a whole, that only in a secondary sense do they represent their respective areas. Consequently, they should, on final decision, be entitled to cast their votes in the General Service Conference according to the best dictates of their own judgment and conscience at the time. Similarly, the trustees of the General Service Board, operating, of course, within the provisions of their own charter and bylaws, to be able at all times to decide when they will act fully on their own responsibility and when will they ask the conference for its guidance, its approval of a recommendation, or for its actual decision and direction. Within the scope of their defined or normally implied responsibilities, all headquarters service corporations, committees, staffs, or executives should also be possessed of the right to decide when they will act wholly on their own and when they will refer their problems to the next higher authority. So before I get to the last paragraph, I just want to go back to that first paragraph, because it says, and I'm going to tell you why I'm repeating this. It says, within the framework of their general responsibilities, whether these be defined by charter, resolution, or custom, it should be the traditional right of all World Service Boards, committees, and executives. So I want you to remember those three categories. All World Service Boards, committees, and executives to decide which problems they will dispose of themselves and upon which matters they will report, consult, or ask specific direction. It's very clear. But now we have delegates all across the United States and Canada who are saying that when they get certain communications from GSO, it's their right of decision whether they share it with their area. And I'm not talking about like, dear delegate, your buddy is so and so for the General Service Conference. I'm not talking about a singly addressed letter. I'm talking about an update to the fellowship. Delegates are not in this paragraph. It doesn't say World Service Boards, committees, executives, and area delegates. It says World Service Boards, committees, and executives. If something is not confidential and gets sent out to a delegate, I'm not saying they have to ask for your feedback. But for delegates to say they shouldn't pass that information on to anyone who's interested to see it, I don't know what page that's on, especially in today's day of email communication. Now, probably the most important part of the right of decision, and this is for every trusted servant. Maybe you're a coffee maker. Maybe your group's never had decaf. Maybe they've never had Earl Grey tea. I don't know. This is for every intergroup chair, every district chair, every area chair, anybody who has a job with an assignment in AA. If all of us had to be frozen in our tracks until the next time the committee or board we report to meets, nothing would ever get done. Nothing would get done. So we have to give people a flexible right of decision to make decisions in the moment. Now, obviously, we say there are no emergencies in AA, but there are things that come up. There are, I mean, I'm not asking anyone to raise their hand, but I can't be the only one who's ever been in an AA group who all of a sudden, one day the church calls your chairperson and they haven't received rent for 8 or 12 weeks. I know I'm not the only one in a group like that that that's ever happened to. And sometimes, what does the church or the community center say to your chairperson? Hey, listen. Because remember, we're usually a non-lease contract tenant, right? We're usually there out of the goodness of people's hearts that give us space and we pay to be self-supporting. But usually, when you get a call like that, it usually goes something like, hey, if you don't pay us, you're not going to be able to meet there any longer. Like, we're not going to let you use the space. Well, any responsible chairperson should probably make sure that the group can function next week and call or meet with that landlord and not wait for a business meeting to pay the back rent. The group is already authorized that we pay rent every month. Pay it. Where that money went, that's a question for another day. Why was the rent not paid? Again, that's a great question for another day. But having the group keep its space, that's the job of the leader who's solving the problem. Now, those type of problems have happened on many levels. Many levels. The AA convention committee or conference committee that thinks they have everything buttoned down with their hotel. They have their last convention or conference committee meeting like 3 weeks before the conference or convention. And then what happens? Some hotel salesperson calls you and says, oh, we made a mistake. You can't have these two rooms. Should we just cancel the whole thing? I mean, yes, we have Zoom today and everything else, but we have to give our leaders room to make decisions. I have seen the breakdown of concept three in person too many times. And it all is always about this last paragraph. I'm going to give you an example going all the way back to 1995. This is public. It was talked about in assembly, so I'm not sharing out of school. I lived in Area 49. I was the recording secretary. All of a sudden, at one of our assemblies, the area treasurer reported, mind you, the area chair, who was the area treasurer, was not present at this assembly, For a couple of assemblies, it had been reported that the treasurer wasn't getting the bank statements in the mail. I know I'm really dating myself. This is pre-email statements, right? No bank website, no app, right? So you had to get the statement in the mail with the checks actually there, like the real checks, you know? And you reconcile it. Old school. But for a couple of months, the treasurer had reported that she couldn't get the bank statements. And finally, when she got them, she reported. Now, I'm just letting you know, this is when she told the assembly. She found out that the old treasurer, who was now the area chair, had lent themselves some money. And the reason the bank statements were diverted was so that the money could be deposited back in before anyone knew the difference, right? Very thankful the treasurer did a lot of due diligence and followed up and everything else. But here's the problem. The treasurer had found that out 6 months before. And so somebody asked the question from the floor, why are we just finding out now? And the answer was that the area officers held an emergency meeting in a Chinese restaurant and decided the groups probably couldn't handle that information. And so they weren't going to tell them. Now, I want to tell you the outcome of that little time period because it taught me a big lesson in AA. The chairperson, when they asked about the former treasurer who's now the chairperson, it was reported that the chairperson was resigning. But the body did not want to remove the chairperson. You know who they wanted to remove? The people who hid it from the fellowship. That's who they wanted to remove. Like it says right here, the right of decision should never be made an excuse for failure to render proper reports of all significant actions taken. It ought never be used as a reason for constantly exceeding a clearly defined authority, nor as an excuse for persistently failing to consult those who are entitled to be consulted before an important action is taken. So if there's time to consult, you don't need the right of decision. If it's a big, important decision, you wait for your committee or your board. You don't, there's no emergency. If there's no time, well, then if you make a decision, the first thing reported at your next meeting, out of order, out of the agenda, should be, I'm the chairperson. I just want to let you know that we had to take this action. We did not have time to wait to today. I want to let you know all the details. That is what the kind of transparency. I know I'm going to get shot by my friends who are still on the General Service Board for this next statement. It's fine. I can agree to disagree and still love them, right? And it's not like I disagree with them and everything, but there are some things that maybe I don't agree with, right? There was a report issued this year that the conference asked for last year of an inventory of the General Service Board. And one of the things that was written in that inventory by the chair of the General Service Board, it's even hard for me to even admit that it's in there or written, was that transparency can't be found in the service manual or any of our literature. Transparency is not one of our principles. Well, I would severely differ. I would actually say that is completely wrong. I would say that, like, I don't know who else has to go to a lot of presentations for work, but like I've already used staying in your lane, like big corporate jargon today, right? Staying in your lane, right? What's the other one that I see in a lot of presentations? Hold on, it's going to come to me. It drives me crazy. Holistically, presenters love the word holistic. This is our holistic solution. This is our holistic remedy. This is our holistic view of our company right now. Like, there are certain buzzwords that the world uses. When the concepts were written, transparency wasn't a buzzword. But that doesn't mean that just because that word isn't in our concepts or service manual, that the very belief or principle of transparency, it's talked about over and over again in the service manual and the concepts. I don't know how they were able to get that in, that transparency is not in our literature. That statement kind of scares me. Now, I will say this. If you're going to argue for transparency, you can't just point the finger at the other guy, right? You can't say, oh, they're not transparent, but I don't want to disclose anything. Like, if I'm looking at the last year, to be fair to the trustees, how is it possible that area delegates asked for the combination meetings of the board and the area delegates to not be recorded? That is absolutely bananas. I mean, that is bananas. So you want to scream at the board for not being transparent, but you don't want this recorded? I shudder to think, like, it has to be fair on all sides. If somebody is clearly exceeding their authority, then you have to bring it to the committee or the board's attention or your area's attention. If they keep exceeding their authority, then that's a reason. And it says, should never be a reason for constantly exceeding a clearly defined authority. And failure to make proper reports of all significant actions, that means timely. It does not mean delaying in reporting to use as some kind of advantage. Because it says right here, sometimes we hear people say, trust the process, right? It could be the board. It could be the conference. It could be your area officers who tell you to trust the process. But there is a requirement for trusting the process in concept three. It's the very last paragraph. It says our entire AA program rests squarely upon the principle of mutual trust. So that means both sides have to trust each other. If I say trust the process and you don't trust me, then that doesn't work because you don't trust the process. But the reason you don't trust the process is because there's no mutual trust. It says we trust God, we trust AA, and we trust each other. Therefore, we cannot do less than trust our leaders in service. The right of decision that we offer them is not only the practical means by which they may act and lead effectively, but it is also the symbol of our implicit confidence. We trust the process as long as we trust the information. It's only when mutual trust is broken that some group in AA does not trust the process, whether that's at a group, a district, an area, a board, a committee, the trustees themselves, or the General Service Conference. Here's my take. I'm a student of all the big AA blowups the last 40 years or so. Definitely the last 30 years. All the big blowups in AA service. If you read history or watch the news or whatever, you will always see, or Let's say you watch crime shows or political dramas, right? We all know the cover-up is usually worse than what had originally happened, right? We all know that. That the cover-up is what usually causes the trouble in so many places in life. But it's the same thing with breaking of mutual trust. The lack of transparency is usually worse than the issue you're talking about. The lack of transparency is what makes people not trust. And since I started off by saying that less than 5% of what we do is confidential, if the constant answer to the fellowship is, you don't need to see this, you don't need to see this, you don't need to see this, that's just going to wear down trust. I'm a believer of the opposite. I say, give them as much as possible. I don't want to pick on any lawyers here because I know there's a few I've counted already. But lawyers have a great trick. They'll never tell you this. I don't think they teach it or want people to know. But lawyers who subpoena information from somebody, the smart people who respond to those subpoenas, they don't restrict the information. They actually send like 100 times more. Like you only want 5 pages, they send you a truckload of boxes, right? Because they want to make you look through every single piece of paper. Like you want transparency, have it. That's why it drives me crazy in AA when we like want to restrict information. Like there's some secret CIA documents. My experience is just give people the information. Some people won't read it and some people will. I think the more you're willing to answer questions and be, report quickly about your right of decision, the quicker. Listen, I'll be very honest, and I think I have a feeling some trustees would agree with me on this. I know a couple would. And I say this as an outsider, and this is what I mean as an outsider. I did not sign the letter last year of a lot of past trustees who were unhappy when the chair of the General Service Board, I don't want to offend anyone. So whether she was asked to resign, resigned on her own, whatever it was, all I know is she was no longer the chair, right? I did not sign the letter of the past trustees who were very upset about it. And I have my own reasons for that. But I will tell you this as an outside observer. I think if the trustees would have had a meeting, emergency meeting that week, like that very week, like sent out an email on Monday to all the delegates and said, we have an urgent issue we need to talk to you about, and we want to fill you in on. We're going to have a Zoom meeting on Wednesday night or Thursday night. I personally believe that if that had happened at that time, much of the trouble that occurred that year would never have occurred. Would some of it have still been there? Yes, no doubt about it. But when you look at when all the trouble brewed, it was between when that happened and 6 or 8 weeks later when the trustees finally had a meeting with all the delegates. 6 or 8 weeks in AA, do you know how many conspiracies the fellowship can come up with in 6 to 8 weeks? I mean, you are talking about an astronomical amount of conspiracies that will be driven up. And I just hope that we learn from that, that if something like that happens again, even if somebody said, like, let's say I was a delegate and I got that email, and let's say I had a business trip planned already and I was going to be in the air, the chair of the General Service Board could have even said, hey, anyone who can't make it, we're going to do it again 2 nights later. All I'm saying is in AA regarding the right of decision, the more communication, the better. Less communication, more conspiracy theories. And, I'm hoping that AA and the service structure is healing, and I think it is. But it cost a lot of people a lot of aggravation last year. And I just don't, I mean, everybody on all sides of it. Hurt feelings, bruised egos, people feeling attacked, people feeling threatened. I could go on and on. And I just say to myself, like, God, if we would have just had a meeting that week, could we have like solved a lot of this? And I'm just telling you, it's not only at the General Service Board level. I've been at area and district meetings and other meetings where trusted servants shut somebody down answering a question without answering the question. And all it does is breed contempt and distrust. Full transparency is the way to have better mutual trust. Now, I will say this. I have seen a lot of bad things happen in AA service because of our failure to make a decision. And we don't need leaders like that. We have to elect the right people who are electing the right decision. And again, I'm going to go back to what I said in the beginning. I said, you elect the GSR and they elect the delegates. But you elect that delegate. That delegate is electing the trustees and approving the board, the slate. I said this at SASA 2 years ago. When you vote for someone to be a delegate, you're voting for the person that's going to vote for a trustee who is going to be in the room with the doors closed for those confidential things that need to be decided. See, I don't get to be in that room anymore, and I don't think there's any trustees in here now, and neither do you. But you're not electing whether it's your area, your group, your district. You're not electing the person who's the nicest. I'm not saying they should be angry to everybody, but you're not electing the person who's the most political. When we elect these trustees and these delegates, we're electing the people who get to be in the room when we don't be there. We have trusted them that they get to make the decision. And those are the things that we forget a lot. The trustees had to have, I'm sure, many executive sessions last year. You could complain that you don't agree with the trustees, but it's the delegates in 2022 and 2021 and 2020 who elected those trustees. They said, this is the person I want in the room when I don't get to be there. This is the person I trust is going to make the best decision for Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes all back, even when we get to Concept 9 in a few weeks. But what does Bill W. talk about at the beginning of Concept 9 in leadership? The first thing he talks about is the breakdown if you elect the wrong person to be GSR. He doesn't talk about chair of the General Service Board. He doesn't talk about chair of AA World Services. He doesn't talk about the publisher of the Grapevine. He says the breakdown begins at the very group level when you don't elect the best person to be a GSR, that it's just a snowball effect the rest of the way. So, we're in election season now in AA. Half of the areas in the United States and Canada, some have probably, it's middle of September. A few have had their elections already. Most of the 40 or 45 elections will take place between now and the end of November. So half of our delegates will be elected this year. And that's the responsibility of the GSRs that your group elects to go there and elect the best people to be delegate. Because once you elect your GSR, you've given your right up to complain about the delegate. You've said this person in my group has the right of decision to cast our vote to elect the best person. And I'm not sure we really take that responsibility at a lot of groups that serious. And sometimes I'm not sure that when the GSRs or other people are electing the delegate, they're thinking in the back of their head, wow, not only do I want them to perform well at the conference, but this is the person I'm going to trust to elect the next few trustees. And those are the people that get to be in the room when no one else is there. And so mutual trust is super important. I'm going to end and go to questions, so please send them in. I like that someone told me the word clear is in there 27 times in the service manual and the concepts. That's pretty funny, right? Like clear, transparent. One could argue, right? Someone wrote, unity does not mean uniformity of thought. It appears the minority opinion is not accessible by the fellowship. Where is this information? So I'm not going to call out the person who asked that question, but here's what I'm going to tell you. Today's date is September 23rd, 2024. I'm looking at a couple of people who I know are in the know and can shake their head to make sure I'm right. But this year, September 15th is not the deadline for proposed agenda items. It's September 30th. Okay. So I think we can all agree, being fully transparent, that there are 7 days, six if this day is already halfway gone, between now and September 30th. So if you don't like the minority filing an appeal rules, because a lot of people don't realize this, according to the current advisory action, only someone below the conference level can file an appeal to the General Service Conference. Now, you could file one if you want, but the board does not have to deal with it because the current advisory action taken from the charter says people below the level of the conference. There's only three classifications below the level of the conference: staff members, directors, and trustees. So, for the person who wrote this and anyone else who's upset by this rule, you have 6 days to send in an agenda item. Ask the conference to add everyone at the level of the conference can file a minority opinion to the conference so that a delegate to the General Service Conference could file a minority appeal on a conference decision. Now, I think it needs more process than that. I'm not saying one pissed off delegate should be able to file a minority appeal, but maybe there should be a process that if an area voted two-thirds in favor of appealing something, that the area delegate should have the right to file an appeal. But right now, that right does not exist. So I appreciate your question, but I hope you submit an agenda item in the next 6 days and let the conference and the fellowship really talk about this, because I think it's important. Did the board ever admit it made a mistake in the way they handled the resignation of the chair? I was not there. I don't believe they did. I believe there was a big communication issue, for sure. I think that was very sad, not in what happened, but into the effect it had on our general service structure and on the conference and people kind of picking sides. I think that's, sad. So I hope that we learned and next time we'll have better communication. Trust but verify. Does that apply to all service positions in the home group? And if so, how do you diplomatically ask for transparency without seeming like you're micromanaging? Well, it depends what issue you're talking about. I would say for most issues, you go to your chairperson. If you have a problem with someone who's not doing their job, go to your chairperson. I would also say this. No behind the scenes kitchen cabinet gossip, innuendo, diner talk. If you have an issue, it's what's going on in your group. Well, then show up at your business meeting and raise your hand and talk about it in a principled way. Say, I don't want to attack anyone personally. I just don't understand what's going on here. It's always better to bring it up in a group conscience setting. When we are told we don't have access to background information, do we have a source to contact to get the information? So I would say this. Email me because I'd like to know what area or district can't get background information. Last week, I announced that the last one I know of that didn't even hand out the conference agenda, their area assembly recently passed an action saying that they would, that that would be in the delegates' responsibilities. But if you're not getting back conference background information or you can't look at it, please send me an email and I will talk to you about it to see if I can understand why. Are you saying GSR's district and area don't have right of decision? Manual refers to World Service Boards. No, you heard me wrong. I was talking about the right to file an appeal, not the right of decision. The right to file an appeal of a conference action only goes to those below the conference level on the upside down triangle chart. That's what the advisory action says. I said the decision and the right of decision in the beginning of concept three is about World Service Boards, committees, and executives, about deciding what to ask and what not ask of the groups. Any other questions? I'll give it a minute or two. Okay, I'm sending my email out. Thanks. Any other questions? Going once. Has any conference not approved the slate of trustees? I am saying that that paragraph, of course, GSRs have right of decision. I'm saying that very front paragraph is about the boards, not about GSRs and DCMs. It says it should be the traditional right of all World Service Boards, committees, and executives to decide which problems they would dispose of themselves and which matters they will report, consult, or ask specific directions. Could a GSR decide what it takes to the group and what it doesn't take to the group? Sure, but it just doesn't arise that occasion all the time. So this question about the slate, there have been Conference Committee on Trustees that didn't approve a slate. It's been handled different ways. Not too many years ago, a conference chair ruled a committee out of order for removing a name from the slate. I would be the first to point out that that chair of the General Service Board made amends at the following next conference for how they handled it. There is nothing that says the chair of the conference can overrule the conference if they want to vote on something. In 1993, a name was taken off the slate by the Conference Committee on Trustees, and the full conference returned that name to the slate. At least since 1990, all slates have been approved of the trustees. Before that, I would really have to do some research. Let's see. Board's conclusion statement and inventory report. Following the resignation of the chair, the communication from the General Service Board that a fellowship was ineffective. There you go. This was made worse because we failed to anticipate the nature and volume of communications from those not on the General Service Board. Together, this caused harm to our staff members, non-trustee directors, and delegates. On behalf of the General Service Board, I offer my sincere apology for the damage of poor communication has caused. The General Service Board is committed to changing how they communicate. There you go. That sounds like an apology to me, but I don't want to put words in their mouth. It sounds like they would have liked to have handled it better. Not make a different decision, but handle it better. Why does Archives refuse to answer questions that might touch upon agenda items? Archives said it so people wouldn't have unequal info, but the cure for that is to give it to anyone. That's a really good question. I tell delegates this all the time. The official background is just a suggestion of background. You can look and get your own background and documents all you want as a delegate. Now, the Archives Department might not give them to you, but I can tell you pretty much everything you want, some past trustee or delegate has, at least 90% of it. Because I have seen items where something that's pertinent was not put in the background, and that's kind of unfair. But I agree with the person who asked the question. If you were to write in and ask for something and they agree that it's pertinent to the agenda item, then just put it in the background for everybody. Did you say you think the fellowship should also discuss the right of a delegate to appeal an area decision? No. I think areas don't have this problem. Each area, 93, each of the 93 areas has their own way of dealing with minority opinion, and I'm not sure which areas would actually honor a minority appeal or petition. Because when we get to that at concept five, I will describe the difference between a minority appeal and petition or just regular minority opinion after a vote. But we're not talking about minority opinion here. We're talking about the General Service Conference has already voted, heard minority opinion. They made their decision, took a second vote. That's it. It's all over. There have been trustees in the past who have filed appeals with the General Service Conference saying, I think this is a grave error and the conference should look at it again. And the board has to decide what to do with that. Like I said, I'm not saying the board would not entertain one from an area delegate, but they don't have to. The process is clearly defined for those below the conference level. Should areas have a right of appeal or petition? That's up to the area. It might be carrying things a little bit too far. You got to understand the right of appeal or petition. You could always put something on the agenda again and have another vote, right? To reaffirm it. The reason for the right of appeal and petition at the conference is because the conference doesn't meet until a year later. And so if you were going to take action after this conference, the board would be listening to the instructions of this year's conference. A right of appeal or petition would be to stop that process and have the board say, we should wait till the next conference before we print this or make this or do this. But again, right now, the process is clear below the conference level. All right, Brooke, I'm done. Thank you.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.